Welcome.
Yeah, welcome to the Flaunt Air Podcast. Straight out of London, UK, it's where we broadcast. Thanks for tuning in and taking your time. Arts and culture, reviews you'll find. We're the top podcast out in London, UK. A great time is what we're fronting every day. Without further ado, let's start the show. Sit back, relax, enjoy, let's go.
The programme tells the I never took performing enhancing drugs, oh hang on, yes I did, story of Lance Armstrong. However, the real star of the tale is not the professional cyclist, but David Walsh. He is the Sunday Times journalist who spoke out about Armstrong's performances and faced the wrath of the Armstrong machine. Stephen Frears' film is inspired by Walsh's book, Seven Deadly Sins. Ben Foster is kept busy playing Armstrong, looking remarkably like the Texan, who is famous for having achieved, and then having been stripped of, seven Tour de France titles. Chris O'Dowd has less to do as Walsh, asking awkward questions and gradually being ostracised from the cycling community for having the nerve to question Armstrong's achievements. Walsh became suspicious because Armstrong's best mountain stage finish in the Tour was 39th. Then he suddenly blew the field away. The film is necessarily compressed. Much has to be missed out when stories spanning years are told on screen. But it jumps too quickly, and without much obvious reason, from Armstrong's insistence on his innocence to his admission on Oprah that he had been cheating. The whole issue doesn't feel as bad as it was. Although there are scenes of Armstrong bullying people, there is little sense of the ongoing intimidation and bad-mouthing that went on to discredit anyone, even friends and colleagues who spoke out. Vintage footage and commentary from past tours is merged with newly filmed shots of cyclists, usually racing terrifyingly downhill. There are reconstructions of the mechanics of doping, and a moment when Armstrong discusses who will play him in the movie of his life. Matt Damon was his choice back when the story wouldn't have included a fall from grace. Having recovered from cancer, Armstrong set up a charity to beat cancer. The part played by this charity in keeping difficult questions away is shown, but how the systemic cheating went on for so long remains unclear. Gifts to the Cycling Federation are mentioned, but not followed up. The Federation's acceptance of a backdated prescription is also not investigated. There are too many shots of needles, bloods and injections for the squeamish, but the film plays as a series of career-era facts. There is nothing of his earlier life, and we learn nothing of his motivation, save for a desire to win. There is no understanding why he suddenly caved in and admitted the truth. The programme tells of a life that knew highs of sporting success and lows of cancer treatment. If the film had been made 10 years ago, Armstrong would have been a hero. Now he's a villain, but he's young enough that maybe in another 10 years, there will be another chapter written which will change the arc of his life again. Recently premiered at the Prince Charles Cinema in Leicester Square, A Sicilian Dream features Francesco da Mosta and Alain de Cadenet exploring the history of the Targa Florio, a Sicilian car race that started in 1906. Historic car racing isn't standard fare for British cinemas, so it was exciting for an aficionado to head out to see Philip Walsh's film on the big screen. The Targa Florio was a mad road race around the twisting roads of Sicily, so long that a driver once had to stop for a sleep. The course was on open roads, which hadn't been shut for the event. Peasants who had never seen such fast cars were a hazard, along with animals and trailers. A modern survivor of this type of racing, albeit for motorbikes, is the Isle of Man TT. But at the Florio, no one stopped people walking on the track during the race. And no one knew when the cars were coming. Drivers had to hide canisters of petrol around the track so they could refuel. There is little footage of the racing until the 70s. A few photos of early races are shown, along with images of cars arriving by boat. There are reconstructions, where men dressed as very clean peasants help drivers who have broken down. A linen-suited Vincenzo Florio races his motor trike and argues with his father. Five historic cars appear to have been taken to Sicily to recreate the race, but there are not enough wide shots for the viewer to enjoy them. When the cars are shown, the shots are very often close-ups of the drivers. The two presenters drive some of the route in an historic Alfa, but historic car lovers will be slightly disappointed. The cars don't feature as much as you would expect. Instead, the film has many interviews between da Mosta and Sicilians who remember the race, or are related to people who were involved. De Cadenet provides insight into why drivers race, recounts his horrifying crash at the Targa Florio, and meets the son of the man who dragged him from his car. The general message is that the Targa existed, got too dangerous, and now doesn't exist. By 1977, the cars had become too quick for the Sicilian roads, and there were too many deaths of drivers and spectators. The film lacks focus. In particular, it starts and ends with some unnecessary stuff about De Mosta getting in touch with his Sicilian side. The film should have skipped the close-ups of eyes, cigarette smoke and Venice, headed straight to Sicily, and focused more on the cars. Nevertheless, seeing historic cars is always a treat, and the race clearly lives on in the mythology of Sicily. Le Mans is the world's greatest motor race, cars racing around the circuit in northern France for a full 24 hours. It is also the name of a self-indulgent film from Steve McQueen. The DVD of this 1971 film contains a short TV documentary called Filming at Speed, the making of the movie Le Mans, which tells that much of the film was shot before there was an actual script. The filmmakers trying to pull a decent film out of the 1 million feet of film that had been exposed. Does the world also need a 100-minute documentary adding more behind-the-scenes details of the making of a minor movie? Directors Gabriel Clark and John McKenna believe so. They have discovered hundreds of hours of new footage and audio, including recordings of McQueen himself. Steve McQueen, The Man and Le Mans, pieces together a patchwork of opinions about and images of the making of the movie. Clark and McKenna also take McQueen's son Chad back to France to reminisce and film a little at the contemporary track. In 1970, McQueen was a huge star and could at last get his dream film financed. As a motorsport lover who had competed in the Sebring 12-hour race, he wanted to try and capture the atmosphere of racing. The obvious setting was the world's greatest race, Le Mans. For insurance reasons, McQueen himself wasn't allowed to compete in the real race. Instead, the filmmakers used top racing drivers like Derek Bell to film real racing action, whilst McQueen drove around the same track in the days after the race. The film they created is virtually plotless and consists mainly of speeding cars and close-ups of drivers. Now the shots would be easy to create, go to any race meet nowadays, and many racers have fitted GoPros to their cars to watch the action later. But this documentary shows that back then the directors, first John Sturges and then, when he resigned, Lee Katzin, had to fit huge 35mm cameras to the sports cars, cameras so heavy that they affected the balance of the cars. Steve McQueen, The Man and Le Mans, makes it clear that the problems during filming were caused by having no script. Sturges wanted Le Mans to be a background element in a love story. McQueen wanted to film racing cars. Eventually, with the project over budget, the studio stepped in, took away McQueen's control, and insisted on the film being finished. The documentary includes archive footage of McQueen racing at Sebring. It also shows the crazy Le Mans starting procedure. The drivers used to stand on the opposite side of the track to their cars. When the start was signalled, the race began with them running to their cars, jumping in, strapping themselves in and starting the engine. Some drivers wouldn't waste time by strapping themselves in. It was a dangerous sport, and death and injury came close to the film when driver David Piper crashed and had to have a leg amputated. Bell also endured a fiery crash from which he recovered. McQueen's son is an executive producer of the film. That doesn't stop mention of his father's daily philandering and some of his human faults. McQueen was quick to drop people when he felt he had been betrayed. The documentary shows the extravagance of the whole production, the way minions were forced to lie to stop true stories of McQueen's lifestyle becoming known. But the story behind the film isn't that interesting, and includes much that was already revealed in the shorter TV documentary already available. The shots of Le Mans, both archive and contemporary, show the thrills of racing. But if you want to see the cars of the period racing, get the original film. That's it for this week. Thanks for listening. You can read more reviews at www.flaneur.london.